The West pledged tanks to Ukraine and Russia in response, launched a wave of missiles, leaving 11 dead, more injured, and again targeting the country's infrastructure. The Ukrainian military said Moscow launched 55 air and sea-based missiles. 47 were shot down, including 20 around Kyiv. In response to the announcements around the tanks, the Kremlin said it was evidence of the growing direct involvement of the United States and Europe in the conflict. Dr. Mike Martin is a senior war studies fellow at King's College London. He's on the line, and good morning, Dr. Martin.
Good morning.
The Russian response was surely expected, it was surely prepared for, but how do you assess its significance and the impact of that Russian response?
I would characterise the Russian targeting of civilians, because that's really what this is, as impotence. And we've seen a pattern here that something happens, some weapons get delivered, or perhaps, the Ukrainians take some territory back. The Russians then say that this is a terrible escalation, and then they launch attacks on civilians. But in military terms, this is impotent, because effectively what they're doing, and, you know, you said in your package there, 47 of the 55 missiles were shot down. They're wasting munitions on non-military targets when they have a very capable Ukrainian military that they could be spending utilizing those munitions on.
If we talk about the tanks, Ukraine had asked for hundreds of tanks. How many will they get, and when will those tanks start to move into Ukraine?
I think if you tot up, there's various pledges now from different countries, and obviously the key with Germany was it not only did they donate some of their own tanks, they've given permission for other countries like Poland to donate Leopard tanks as well. I think we're up to about 100 or 150 if you do the maths. What that looks like on the ground is an armoured brigade. And just for your listeners, I mean, that's a capable formation, several thousand troops mixed in with armoured infantry. And what that will allow the Ukrainians to do is punch through the Russian lines. As for how long it's going to take to get there, the best guess is probably about 6 to 8 weeks. So this political decision that they've just made was really made at the last safe moment to get the tanks into Ukraine in time for something to happen in the spring.
We might talk about that timeline and the 6 to 8 weeks and what happens in the interim. But when those tanks move in, and I don't think tanks would have been seen as the key point in this war a year ago when it started. But how will they use them? You talk about them pushing through the Russian defence. Is that pushing through in the east, pushing through even to Crimea?
It's unlikely to be in the east, I think. Both sides are going to look to have some sort of spring offensive. For the Ukrainians, the most obvious place to do that is in the south of Zaporizhia, because if they can get through the Russian lines there and get to the coast, what they do is they cut the Russian forces in two. So there'll be one set of Russian forces in the Crimea in the south and one in the east in the Donbass. And so I think they're unlikely. The Russians are very, very keen to push forward in the east to complete their taking of the Donbass. That's what Putin has said is his political goal. So I think both sides are going to have offensives in different areas.
But in the meantime, Russia has that 6 to 8 week window.
Yes.
Some experts now talk about Putin as being reckless and emotional. What happens in that 6 to 8 week interval?
Russia is very unlikely to escalate the conflict to bring in other NATO countries. That would be complete madness. I think similarly, they're very unlikely to escalate to using nuclear weapons for the same reasons. It's basically mutually assured destruction. Then we have to look at what Russia has in the country. And the Russian armed forces in Ukraine are numerous. There are lots of very poorly trained men, conscripts, prisoners, as your listeners will know, but they're not very technically adept and they're not brilliantly supplied. So there's a limited amount that they can do in what we're still in the depths of winter in Ukraine. We're still in sub-zero temperatures. So we'll see some more of what we've seen in places like Soledar, which is lots of human wave tactics at great expense to take small areas. But I don't think that there is very much that Russia can do in a sort of operational strategic sense. And that's why we're seeing these missile attacks on civilian blocks of flats, because they don't have any other options.
Just one final question. Will Ukraine look for more? Will they look now for fighter jets? Will they look for more sophisticated weaponry?
Of course they will.
Do they get them?
I suspect they will. I mean, the story of the war has been that, and the reason they've asked for, originally they asked for anti-armor missiles, then anti-aircraft, then artillery, now we're talking about tanks. That's because basically over the course of the war, Ukraine has shifted from being on the defensive to being on the offensive. And so they've needed different weapon systems at different times. And yes, they will. I'm not sure they're going to get fighter jets. They might get even longer range artillery that enables them to hit the Russians very comfortably in Crimea. So I do see them continuing to ask for more. And frankly, I see the West continuing to give it. It will take us a long time to get our heads around it, but we'll eventually donate it, because European leaders are coming to the conclusion that there is absolutely no way that this can be allowed to stand. And so I think Ukraine will get their weapons.
Dr. Mike Martin, thank you for your time this morning.